Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Kaveh Movahed. Unemployment numbers are still very high in New Mexico, 7.4% with the last numbers we have from May, but also high is the number of unfilled jobs in the state. It's a national trend. Axios recently reported 10 million unemployed Americans. At the same time, we have 9 million job vacancies. So what gives? Some frustrated business owners have pointed to enhanced jobless benefits from the government as motivation to stay home. Others see it as a supply and demand issue, where people can be more selective in choosing work as we emerge from the pandemic restrictions. And now, the state's offering cash bonuses for workers who transition from unemployment to jobs this month. Today, we'll talk to the Department of Workforce Solutions, which handles unemployment in the state, an economist who's been studying New Mexico's pandemic economy, a small restaurant owner who's doing everything he can to keep his doors open, and a policy expert from a grassroots organization which represents working families. We want to hear from you also, whether you're deciding if it's time to return to work or how to get more employees to keep your shop open. Please reach out. Email us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in live at 277-5866. My first guest is Ricky Serna. He's the acting secretary of New Mexico's Department of Workforce Solutions, which helps with things like matching employers with workers and administering unemployment benefits. Good morning, Mr. Serna. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thank you. First, can you give us an idea of how many New Mexicans are receiving unemployment benefits right now?
I can. Let me pull that number up right now. So as of 7-2, we've got about 68,000 actually as of yesterday that are receiving unemployment benefits.
Okay. And those benefits, for those who aren't familiar, pay about how much normally?
Right now, it's probably about an average of just over $600 a week. That's inclusive of the federal pandemic unemployment compensation program, otherwise known as FPUC, which provides claimants an additional $300 a week.
Okay. Just doing some quick math, someone making, say, $12 an hour would earn about $480 a week if they were working full time. So it's a little better than that. When do those enhanced benefits, that extra $300 a week, when does that expire?
So the end of the federal extension programs is the first week of September, September 4th. So the federal extension programs include the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, which was namely released for self-employed gig economy workers. It includes the FPUC, the additional $300 a week, and other programs that have added program weeks like PEUC and PEUCA. Those are the federal programs that will no longer be available as of right now, September 4th.
Okay. Can you kind of tell me about the current trends in unemployment numbers? Are they going up or down? How do they compare with 6 months ago or a year ago?
Sure. If we look at, we like to take a look, a week at a time at this point. We're trying to monitor what the reinstatement of work search requirements has done over a period of time. And then we, of course, look to see how things are changing week to week. If I take, a 7-day look back from 6:30 to 7-7, for example, we're down about 2,000 claimants, and that number is down from 70,600 to about 68,600 on claimants who are actually receiving benefits. So that's a look back. If you want to kind of make a comparison, we can go back, for example, to a week like January 11th of 2021. We had upwards of 103,000 claimants receiving benefits.
Okay, now here's a kind of a bigger question. How much is unemployment costing New Mexico? And I guess I'm also wondering, a lot of these dollars are federal dollars. Where's the rest of the money coming from?
Sure. So right now we have of the 68,000 that are on total claimants right now receiving benefits, 15,000, just over 15,700 of those claimants are what we call regular unemployment insurance claimants, meaning that they are essentially drawing benefits from the state's trust fund, right? So That's 15,000 out of 68,000. The remainder of them, the sum to be over 52,000, just under 53,000 of them, are all on federal extension programs. So those 53,000 those 53,000 claimants are receiving benefits that we are drawing reimbursements from USDOL for those dollars. So to answer your question, just about 15,000 claimants are receiving regular UI benefits from the trust fund, which is just under double of what we were pre-pandemic levels.
Okay, so we've heard that there's something like 9 million open positions in the nation. Do we have any sense of how many open positions there are right now in New Mexico?
Sure. So we just released a report not too long ago that looked at employment numbers for May of 2021. And in May of 2021, there were about 69,900 unemployed persons in the state who were willing and able to work. And then according to our online system, our workforce connection online system, which is the system that we utilize to assist with job placement, at that same time, there were over 69,000 advertised openings, right? So you've got 69,900 unemployed, and in May, you had 69,077 advertised job openings, right? So you've got a gap there of, give or take 900 positions, but that's what we're looking at right now.
Okay, I have a question for our listeners. Are you in Santa Fe, Las Vegas, or Taos? Do you think it's time for expanded unemployment benefits to end now that COVID-19 restrictions are gone? Yes or no? We'd like to hear your reasoning. Tweet with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM, email letstalk@kunm.org, or call us 277-5866. Okay, Ricky, the state's been thinking about how to get workers back into the workforce and last week announced a return to work incentive program. Tell us about how that works.
Sure. So the program is really aimed at helping claimants with the return to work costs, the costs associated with getting back to work. And that can range from everything on transportation-related costs, getting their children back into daycare, or whatever else, right, they may need to pay for as soon as they start receiving some sort of wages, right? So if you take, for example, an unemployment insurance claimant, the first week that they report to work, they're going to go in and certify. And even though they haven't been paid for that first week, the wages were technically earned on that first week, so they've got to report them, and they can see an immediate decrease to their weekly benefit amount even before they receive their first paycheck. So part of this is that support, right, that they're going to need when they return to work. So beginning the week of July 4th, which was this past Sunday, if a claimant received a job between July 4th and July 10th, they'll go in on the Sunday, July 11th, they'll go in during the certification process. They'll indicate that they started work on that week. And then all they have to do after that is stop certifying through August 28th, right? And at the end of August 28th, if they've stopped certifying and they've kept that job, then they'll receive a $1,000 support payment. And there are four different weeks that claimants can come into program, eligibility program. So on July 11th, if they get a job beginning July 11th, they'll report it the same way on that subsequent Sunday, and the amount they'll receive after August 28th goes down by $200 every week for 4 weeks. So it's $1,000, $800, $600, and then $400 for July 25th, the week of July 25th.
Okay. So it's kind of tiered. The sooner you get back to work, the larger the payment is. And when do those payments go out?
So the program ends on August 28th, so we anticipate the first week of September we can get payments out, and we'll issue the payments through whatever mode of payment the claimant had already identified with for their unemployment insurance benefits.
All right. I wonder, have we seen something like this in other places?
Sure, we have in other states. For example, one of the models that we had looked at was the state of Montana. The state of Montana had $1,200 payments, support payments to claimants, I believe, after 4 weeks of getting and keeping a job. So it is a model that other states have exercised to, again, support that return to work activity.
Okay, so if we're looking to other states to kind of see what's worked and what hasn't in other places, I guess I'm just wondering, why not just end the enhanced unemployment benefits like some other states have?
I think it's important to consider a number of things. For example, the extent of which, you know, unemployment benefits, you know, exceed for some individuals, right, wages. I think in New Mexico, we have to understand what unemployment benefits, you know, did for individuals who were earning low wages and what an abrupt stop to that might do to New Mexicans who, you know, otherwise can't afford, right, to take care of their families and support themselves. So creating this off-ramp, right, through September 4th, I think is important, understanding that a lot of New Mexicans are going to need to pivot professionally. They're going to have to, in some instances, learn a new skill, you know, receive workforce development training, perhaps switch employers. There are several opportunities, to be sure, where workers are going to be able to return exactly to where they were pre-pandemic. And in other instances, there is going to be a need for New Mexicans to really pivot career-wise and in some instances obtain new skills before they're qualified for new jobs.
Okay, we got an email from Dawn. She says, if you continue to give unemployment benefits to people, they will wait until the benefits are finished before finally getting a job. Stop the benefits and people will need to work again. End of story. If the decision not to return to work is simply an economic one, I'm wondering, aren't low-wage earners better off waiting for the end of the enhanced benefits? What do you think?
Well, I think that's a gamble, right? You've got to understand that we just looked at the numbers, right? 69,000 unemployed New Mexicans in May with 60,000 jobs. I think part of that risk is whether or not there's going to be a job waiting for them when that day comes, right? And they're going to reach, you know, a wall where there's, you know, a long line for jobs that perhaps, you know, are already been filled or jobs that aren't available anymore. So I think New Mexicans are certainly very calculated. They're planning for you know, a job that they feel that they can stay in for a period of time. And certainly if you've got claimants who are out there waiting for that sweet spot of, you know, ending benefits and getting a job, the risks that they're going to face, of course, is that those jobs are going to be filled before, you know, they get to the front of the line. And we certainly don't want that to happen, because if they're on federal extension programs, there's very little that, you know, unemployment insurance can do to kind of carry them forward after that.
And perhaps an even worse scenario comes to mind. I've talked to a lot of small business owners this week preparing for the show, and many of them aren't sure they're going to be able to keep their doors open much longer. So those jobs might just evaporate.
That's true, too, right? We have to recognize that there are some businesses that either have needed to reduce, you know, their capacity for employees or altogether may not have recovered from the pandemic. So, you know, we may see initially, you know, a decline in the total number of available jobs. That's not something we know for certain just yet. But again, I think it's important for New Mexicans to understand, you know, that even at a time where you can see every other business on the road, you know, waving a help wanted sign, that those opportunities are going to be very competitive as thousands and thousands of New Mexicans go back to work all at once. And the smartest thing to do is get ahead of all of that.
Okay. Thank you so much for being with us today, Acting Secretary Ricky Cerna from the Department of Workforce Solutions. If you can hang on with us for just a bit, maybe we'll get some callers who have questions about the unemployment and the return to work programs. We do need to go to a break. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We're taking your calls about enhanced unemployment benefits set to expire in a couple of months. Give us a call, 277-5866, to tell us your employment plans. We'll be right back.
Support comes from REDW, an Albuquerque CPA and advisory firm founded in 1953 by New Mexicans for New Mexican businesses and individuals. Complete details about advisory and regulatory services at REDW.com.
Support comes from Il Vicino Restaurants in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, open for indoor and patio dining. Sunday through Thursday, 11 till 9, Fridays and Saturdays, 11 till 10. Dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service available. IlVicino.com.
Violinist Randall Goosby sees a parallel between his two passions.
There are so many tiny little things that happen with the hands, with the wrists, with the arms, with the torso in a golf swing that you actually don't see, you're not aware of. And it's the same thing with playing an instrument.
PT young artist and golfer Randall Goosby on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Kaveh Movahed. If you have questions about unemployment benefits or the state's return to work program, we have the secretary, the acting secretary of the Department of Workforce Solutions on the line. Give us a call, 277-5866. I'd like to introduce our next guest, Ali Arshad. He's an economics professor at New Mexico Highlands University who studies economic impacts of investment and disinvestment in economies. In December, he published an article describing the economic fallout in New Mexico from pandemic shutdowns. Thank you so much for joining us, Professor Arshad.
Thank you for inviting me.
Sure. I wonder if you heard the email we got from Don earlier, who said basically the gist was stop the benefits and people will need to work again, talking about the extra enhanced unemployment benefits. Do you think that's the case?
I am afraid it's a little bit more complicated than that. People don't just look at the benefits that they're receiving, and then when it ends, they finally decide that, well, now's the time to look for a job. It's not as simple as that. Benefits help people, not only in the short run, but also in the long run. It's vital for the economy. It helps people find jobs that are suited to their skills and qualifications. So in the long run, they work out better for the economy. But even in the short run, it helps families cushion their income.
Okay. Can you kind of tell us about New Mexico's unemployment rate over the last year? We know it went up during pandemic closures, but I'm wondering if it's come back down now. I'm kind of thinking of a bell curve. Is that what we're seeing?
Yeah. Actually, I like to tell my colleagues that it's more like a visits cap. There was a very sudden spike in the unemployment rate back last year in July. And it went to as high as 12.5%. In December of 2019, our unemployment was 5%. And then within 4 months, it doubled to 10%. By I believe it was April, it went to 10%. And since then, it has started to come down to 8%. But if you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics data, going back to 2008, when the Great Recession started, this is the highest that we have had. So we are at a historically very high rate of unemployment in New Mexico.
Well, now I'm starting to think about the other end of the unemployment equation. And I have a question for Ricky Cerna. I'm wondering if you can tell us about services provided to employers. How are you trying to help them, you know, staff up?
Sure. That's a great question. I'm glad you asked. So we actually, as part of our effort and support of reopening the economy, we've worked on establishing a program called Ready New Mexico. We launched the program on June 30th, and the website where you can find information about how to receive any of the services I'm going to talk about is ready.nm.gov. And ready.nm.gov is a kind of a one-stop portal for both job seekers and employers that essentially connects open available positions and employers who are hiring with job seekers, right? And then it provides information about the minimum qualifications, training programs that can help job seekers obtain those skills and minimum qualifications, and then information about additional services, whether it's scholarships or grants, childcare services, adult education services and programs, et cetera. We've also launched a toll-free number that employers can call and job seekers. It's 800-303-3599. And if you're an employer and you're looking, actively looking to hire, you can use that 800 number to connect with a career consultant anywhere in the state. You provide them with an overview of the number of positions, the type of positions, the salary, you name it, the minimum qualifications. And we can go as far as actually conducting the screening of those initial applicants, the direct referrals, meaning that after we do initial screening, we can direct refer applicants directly to your business so that there's less work on the front end for employers, right, on that initial screening of applicants before conducting interviews. So we can do everything from posting your jobs online in our workforce system. We can do initial screening. We can even do initial testing if that's necessary. And then the direct referrals to businesses so that, you know, the time frame in which it takes to, you know, post a job, screen applicants and interview can get cut down significantly.
I wonder if there's any way to know if you have better luck finding applicants who want to work and then kind of follow through than small business owners might have working on their own.
Well, you know, I think certainly we have the capacity, but what's good also about what we do is, let's just say somebody comes in and there's an initial interest in that job, right? And after learning more about it, they're no longer interested, or perhaps their skill set or even their availability doesn't align with the expectations of the employer, we have the capacity then to redirect them, right, to an opportunity that perhaps is better suited for them. So when an employer, right, is promoting for a job, they're certainly vested and interested in what they need as an employer, right, from an employee or an applicant. When they come to us, we have the opportunity to kind of more closely match that individual applicant with whatever job opportunity is going to work best for them. So there's a broader approach that we take, not only to just find what's good for one employer looking for an applicant, but to understand how that applicant might better, you know, fit within another organization.
Okay, this is a good time for me to ask a question of our listeners. Is your business struggling to stay staffed up enough to serve your customers? Have you tried to lure new applicants in the door? Have you had to compromise by cutting back on business hours or services? Share with us by calling 277-5866, email letstalk@kunm.org, or tweet with the hashtag letstalknm. Okay, I want to go back to Professor Arshad. How do unemployment dollars impact the economy?
Well, first, it provides cushion to the consumers, to the people, to the household. And so they have, if they are unemployed, obviously there's very little coming. If you have unemployment benefit coming, that's the money that they will spend. So if you didn't have that unemployment benefit, the consumer spending is going to decrease. So the initial impact is that it cushions the economy. It helps people spend money. So the effect is a little bit less than what it would be. So that's the short-term impact. But of course, long-term impact is that unemployment benefits. There are studies that have been done, and they show that the longer the unemployment benefits, the greater is the likelihood that people are going to find jobs that are in their area. And that's a net positive for the economy. So I believe that unemployment benefits help the economy not only in the short run, but also in the long run.
Okay, I guess I was kind of thinking of, you know, what I've heard about other social programs like food assistance programs, where they say the net impact is actually larger. Every dollar spent creates a larger economic impact than a dollar out in the world. Do you think that's also similar then with unemployment dollars?
Absolutely. Yeah. For families, if you think intuitively, they increase the power, purchasing power. And their overall well-being. So it's good for them. And then all these programs, food stamp, unemployment benefits, Medicaid, they have had a tremendous impact on the U.S. economy. If you look at the poverty rates, go back 50 years, we have been able to cut the poverty rates in half because of all these programs. So the net effect has been quite positive.
Okay, but I guess there is just a lot of speculation out in the world that the extra pay, the enhanced benefits, are keeping workers from returning to the workforce. I wonder if there's any evidence for or against that.
Actually, there was one study that was done by the Federal Reserve Bank. They published their findings just recently. It was done by economists at the Federal Reserve Bank at San Francisco. And they found that the effect is very moderate. There's a very moderate disincentive of the $600. They actually looked at the CARES Act, the $600 supplemental payment, and the decision to look for a job. And they found that it has a very negligible effect on people finding jobs. And they also concluded by extension that the 300 extra weekly that came into effect in 2021 also has a very small impact. So when job seekers are weighing the value of a job against against the remaining unemployed, they look at many different factors. It's not just the benefits. They're looking at long-term prospect.
Okay, so then I'm wondering if there are best ways to move unemployed workers back into the workforce without negatively impacting their lives, you know, by immediately cutting off benefits. I guess I'm wondering, is there a right way versus, or a best way versus a wrong way to do this?
That's a very tough question. What's the wrong way or right way? But the economy is eventually going to come back to the normal level. In the meantime, we have to provide all sorts of assistance to the unemployed, maybe better work training. Some of the what the state is doing is well intentioned regarding giving them incentives to find jobs, but it's yet to be seen if that's going to have an effect. I am afraid there are not too many good answers regarding how to quickly put back people to work.
Okay, here's an easy question for you. You just mentioned a return to a more normal economy soon. When's that going to happen?
That's, again, a good question. A lot of it depends on what happens to this Delta variant that's spiking up in many areas. So all the estimates that I've seen is based on the economy completely opening up. And the CBO's estimate was that we'll probably return to normal third quarter of this year. However, if we have another shutdown, I hope we don't have that because of the Delta variant, then, all bets are off. It's hard to say. But if we continue to do well, we are making improvements. As I mentioned, the New Mexico unemployment rates have come down from a high of 12.5% to 8% in May, according to the BLS figures. So we are making improvement. The fiscal stimulus is having an impact. Let's hope that we don't have another outbreak.
Okay, I'd like to add a business owner's perspective to the conversation. We are grateful to have Jacob Elliott joining now. He owns the Albuquerque Nob Hill restaurant, The Pharmacy, that's with an F. We know it's a tough time to be a small business owner caught between the pandemic's decimation of the economy and a community that wants the best for its workers. I want to start by acknowledging that it's also challenging to come on the radio to talk about it. Thank you for being with us this morning, Jacob.
Hey, Kelly, thanks for having me.
The Pharmacy has been in the news through and before the pandemic for the support it gets and gives to the community. In December, you had to do some crowdsourcing in order to stay open. Now, pandemic restrictions have been lifted, but the new challenge is to keep up the level of service customers expect without the staff you need to do it. Are you still feeling supported by the community? Have the customers come back?
Yes, definitely the customers have come back. We've always had great support from the community. And I guess I want to start by saying that the Pharmacy has always been a very progressive leaning restaurant, and we're fully on the side of this developing movement for getting workers a livable wage, a better livable wage, whatever that happens to be. So with whatever questions you ask, I just want you to know that I'm just trying to give the perspective from a restaurant owner, because it's been there's been cases of backlash for people that are that come out as sort of speaking against the movement. So I just want to start off by saying that we're aligned with that movement, but I hope to dispel some of the misconceptions about being a restaurant owner during this time.
Okay. Well, let's talk more about the mechanics. Let's talk about staffing. You've been shorthanded for some time now. What's going on? Are people coming in to apply for jobs?
People are not really coming in to apply for jobs, and we have posts up on pretty much every platform that we can have them on. It's, you know, we have them on Facebook and Instagram and Craigslist and Indeed, and we're just not seeing, you know, anything come in. I mean, it's just been crickets, and it's frustrating, because now that the economy is opening back up and we want to do what we love to do, which is cook food and get people in to enjoy it, there's just not the staff available. So we've had to drastically reduce the menu. Sometimes we have to actually just close because we don't have the staff to operate the kitchen. And it's a little bit frustrating for sure.
I guess this is a good time to mention that in preparation for this show, I talked to Daniel Boardman, who owns Tia Betty Blues, La Waffleria, and El Cotoro. He emphasized how hard work has been for his small staff that stuck with him. And he told me that while he's getting a few applicants, many of them just aren't experienced or qualified, and that it's nearly impossible to train them when already shorthanded in a busy season. Tia Betty Blues announced yesterday that they will close for at least a week while hiring and training new workers. Jacob, are you experiencing the same kinds of challenges that Daniel mentioned?
Yeah, for sure. You know, we've had to, we used to be open on Thursdays regularly. We've had to close certain days. You know, you have to kind of pick what are your days that you most need to be open. What are the days that help the most to pay your payroll? And those typically are brunch. So if we're seeing that we're going to have a shortage of staff, we have to close the days that are less profitable and put that staff on days that are more profitable just to try and keep some income coming in the door.
Okay. We have a question from Courtney in Albuquerque. She asks, what's stopping business owners from paying people more? If jobs paid as well as unemployment benefits, people would be more inclined to take a job. If folks have children at home, it seems foolish to go back to work to something like a bartending job where your income fluctuates versus something consistent. What do you think?
Right. So I think this is one of the most major misconceptions that people have about being a restaurant owner. And that is that you can't just pay more than you're actually bringing in. So restaurant owners aren't just sitting on a pool of untapped capital that they can pull from. I mean, at least we're not. I can't speak for everybody. So increasing wages to, say, you know, it's been kind of bantered around $15, $16 an hour. If we started everybody at $16 an hour, some days we would be paying out more than the restaurant actually brings in. So it's not a very sustainable model. So the only way that restaurants can really do that, for us that is by raising prices.
I have a question for Professor Arshad. In your report from 2020, you listed some of the segments of the economy that could suffer the worst from pandemic closures. Weren't restaurants right near the top?
Absolutely. Restaurants, hospitality industry, hotels, their airlines, they were all badly hit, as I predicted. But many of them are coming back. The hotel industry has been hiring people. So hopefully the restaurant sector will also have the same positive impact.
Okay. Back to Jacob, what kinds of things are you doing to lure new workers?
Well, so we've tried to increase our hourly wage, which has taken some restructuring because, you know, a lot of people suggest, you know, tipping the kitchen, which we typically did up until the last little while of hiring, because at a certain point, there's not enough tips to go around to keep the servers happy, which, you know, they're used to making a certain amount of money. So we've tried to raise prices recently to increase wages and also give sign-on bonuses for people that can show up to work and show up on time for 2 weeks. They'll get a cash bonus.
Okay, and you're ready to pay those bonuses and hire now, right?
Right. We haven't had to actually pay any of those bonuses because a lot of the workers come in and they just quit after a day or so, or they just don't show up, or we'll talk to someone and tell them to come in, you know, the next day for the job, and they don't come. So at this point, it's so desperate that we're hiring sight unseen. You know, if a resume comes in, we call the person, we just say, look, we're going to offer you the job, show up tomorrow. You know, we don't even do our usual vetting process of interviews and working interviews and stuff. It's just, at this point, we have to hire them right away or someone else is going to get them.
Okay, job searchers, I hope you heard that. There are jobs out there ready for you right now. It's time that we take a quick break. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. Stay right there. We'll be back in a minute.
The discovery of more than 1,000 children's remains at several Catholic Church-run residential schools in Canada has Indigenous leaders demanding a formal apology from the Pope for generations of horrific abuse. It's also sparking discussions about re-examining Native people's relationship with Christianity. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Donations come in many forms, a sustaining membership, a one-time gift, even that extra vehicle you no longer need. Donating a vehicle is a great way to support KUNM. It's easy. Pickup is free, you get a tax deduction, a KUNM membership, and your vehicle could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Give us a call today to learn more about donating your vehicle. Call 888-KUNM-CAR, that's 888-586-6227. And thanks for your support.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. There's still time for you to call to tell us what you're planning to do about work now that COVID restrictions have been lifted and the state is open for business. Call 277-5866 and tell us what you're thinking. We have a caller, Ralph, from Albuquerque on the line. Go ahead, Ralph.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
I thought I'd just call in and offer a little bit of perspective from the point of view of a gig worker. We're seeing, I think, that's a new economic model, sort of replacing employment. It's certainly less expensive for employers to use a contractor where they don't have to pay benefits and such. And so we're seeing a proliferation of that in today's economy. And particularly in an economy like Albuquerque's, where I think all can acknowledge that we've had a shortage in employment and difficulties with unemployment, that seems to be a big part of the employment and in income picture here in Albuquerque, the self-employed. And I've got to say, as being one myself and in my 50s, and it's hard to get a job, at least the types of jobs that's going to keep me interested and employed long term, I've resorted to the gig economy. I'm a gig worker. And if it had not been for this pandemic unemployment assistance, the PUA benefits that we've received over the past year and a half, I couldn't have made it. I would simply not have survived. I'm one of those people who has done better with the benefits we've received and all the grants and loans that have been thrown at us during this time. It's been a true lifeline.
Okay, let's go to Professor Arshad on that and ask, what are the implications of gig workers on both the pandemic economy and unemployment?
Well,
people are becoming more entrepreneurial. That's one of the positive side effects of this unemployment rate. The gig economy is going to become even bigger, as the caller talked about his experience. So I believe that we don't really know what the net impact would be, because we don't know, you know, the kind of benefits that people will receive, for example, working for Uber or having an Airbnb. So that is yet to be determined. But this is going to, the gig economy is going to become a major facet of our economy, not just our economy, but the global economy.
Okay, thank you. I have one more question for Jacob Elliott. What about the return to work program offered by the state's Workforce Solutions Department? Do you think that's going to help? And isn't it pretty similar to the cash bonuses you're offering, the sign-on bonuses?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually just not sure that that is going to do the trick, because I know that the first week of that was the 4th through the 10th, I believe, to get the $1,000 payment. And we have had help wanted signs up the entire week and have gotten two people that applied. So I think the reason that I don't think it's going to work is that the $1,000 payment to help offset costs like childcare, it doesn't really fill that immediate need, because a claimant needs to wait 4 weeks in order to even get that payment. So it's probably, I mean, more realistic that they just stay getting the increased benefits. I mean, at least for myself, if I was in that position, it probably would be. So I don't have the answers, you know? Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to add one more voice to this discussion. Joining us now is Erica Gallegos. She's the policy director for OLE, a grassroots organization that advocates for the needs of working families. Good morning, Erica. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. OLE is working directly with working families to make policy change. What are you hearing from them about unemployment benefits and the questions of returning to work?
Right. So we talk to workers every day across the state, many who are on unemployment, and we hear stories like, for instance, that of Brianne, who is a worker in Albuquerque that has three kids, who says, you know, $13.50 an hour just isn't enough for an apartment that isn't big enough for her family, in addition to other bills. A worker named Gabriella, who got COVID in November, and it nearly took her life. She's still on oxygen, and she says she would love to go back to work. However, she has not been able to get hired because she has to be on oxygen all day. So we're hearing stories from a lot of folks that are either still dealing with issues of having gotten COVID, or not being able to pay their bills on the wages that are being offered. Or, for instance, another one of our members who is a business owner, she has children who have compromised immune systems, and they have to travel to Colorado for treatment for their illness. And it's fear, right? Many people have children or elderly parents that are living with them with compromised immune systems that, you know, could still contract COVID and affect their families.
Okay, I have a question for the listeners. Are health concerns or other economic realities keeping you home and from joining the workforce? Call in live, 277-5866. Erica, do workers you talk to what do they want from their employers before they go back to work? What are they asking for?
Well, higher wages, definitely. Many workers that we talk to, especially women, through the pandemic, they lost their jobs due to lack of childcare. So and childcare is extremely expensive out of pocket. One really great thing that was announced on July 1st by the governor and our early ed department is that they are doubling access to child care assistance in New Mexico. So that means that if a family that lives below 350% of the poverty level applies for child care assistance, they can receive that assistance and stay on assistance up to 400% of the federal poverty level. However, for those workers that work in the service industry, that are tipped workers in particular, you know, the most amount of tips that one can make in those types of jobs are typically in the evenings or on the weekends when childcare is not available. So to be able to go back to work, we really have to think about what childcare is available for those families and the wages that they need in order to survive.
And of course, there are really two issues with childcare. One is the low wages for childcare providers, but then also when they disappear from the markets, other people can't go back to work because they're stuck at home. So that's a double-edged sword. I have caller Renee from Santa Fe on the line. Renee, go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
Awesome, awesome. My name is Renee Morskinny. I'm a dentist in Santa Fe. I own a dental practice that has been there about 7 years. It's a really busy dental practice, and we treat a lot of the patients in Santa Fe. But I was telling is that when I was talking to the intake person, we're on the verge of basically having to shut down because of this, and I kind of mirror the experience I'm having is similar to the gentleman that owns the pharmacy restaurant in Albuquerque, where there's hardly any applicants. I've been looking for dental assistants for 6 months. The ones that I'm having encounters with aren't generally showing up, and it's just really bad. And part of the thing that I think is a chronic issue here in New Mexico, I'm originally from Colorado prior to moving here 7 years ago, is since day one of owning this business, the New Mexico Workforce Solutions has given unemployment to every single person that's applied, even with hearings, the last being somebody prior to COVID that walked out and quit in front of three staff members, and I submitted those signed witness accounts to the hearing judge, and they still ruled that she got unemployment, and he told me that was hearsay. And I'm still getting renewal notices from that person. The other one, I gave her a month off for maternity leave, and she never came back, and she never told us she wasn't coming back.
Okay, this actually sounds very familiar. We've heard these stories again and again. Earlier this week, I talked to Matt DeGregory. He's the CEO of the Range Cafe restaurants, and he told me that applicants are leveraging the lopsided labor market by demanding top wages they don't qualify for. Have you seen something like this, Renee?
Awesome that you're bringing this up. So I think that what's happening now with the candidates out there that are, keep in mind, this field, you need to have licensure, right? So, and there's not a lot of applicants generally even out there. So I can't hire and train somebody to be a dental hygienist. They have to go through the program, dental license. Well, for dental assisting, they can just have a radiology license, but still that takes some time. That being said, they'll actually state that they're coming in. I'll have a phone interview with them, and then they come back and they say, oh, well, I got a better offer at my job. So okay. They're going to quit those people that are actually working, and they want higher pay. Then they go back and to their current employer and say, oh, I'm going to quit. I have another offer.
Okay. And we have a very different perspective from Nat in Santa Fe. Nat, are you with us?
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can.
Great. So my name is Matt Dean. I'm disabled. I live in Santa Fe. And the disabled were out here and were ready and willing to work. And with COVID-19, we've actually had a little bit of a leveling of the playing field because a lot of us can work remotely from home, whereas prior experiences would be, we need boots on the ground when the rail runner wasn't running and we couldn't drive to Albuquerque for meetings. All of a sudden, Zoom was the happening thing. And people with disabilities are 25 to 28% of the population. So that's one and a half, yeah, excuse me, two and a half people out of your group of 10 sitting around your table have some kind of disability. It may be more visible for one person, less visible for another. And the reasonable accommodations that are needed are not always that large.
Okay, thank you so much for calling, Nat. We appreciate that. Erica, we've already talked about childcare, but what about healthcare? Is that something that workers are hoping to get through the workplace, or are they looking for other bigger systematic change?
Well, I would say that's true. I would say both. you know, one of the things that we worked on with during the last legislative session, we were able to pass paid sick leave, making sure that families are able to take care of themselves and their families through the through any sickness, or if they're dealing with domestic violence issues, they can take the time off needed for that. And so I would say that would be another incentive that is coming down the road next July that I believe would also encourage folks to get back to work now, right? Knowing that if employers did offer that, knowing that they would be able to take the time off if, for instance, they got COVID. But absolutely, healthcare benefits, that it's healthcare access is a huge issue that we hear as well.
Okay, I'd like to point out that as of the beginning of this month, zero premium health plans are available through the Affordable Care Act marketplace to those who are returning to the workplace. And actually, I'd like to go to Jacob. Healthcare is so expensive, probably not something a lot of small business owners can offer. What about paid sick leave? It seems like you're going to have to do it in about a year or so. Is that something you've thought about offering now to lure people in?
You know, that hasn't even been something that we've had time to think about because, like, we're operating on such a skeleton crew at the moment. If one person gets sick, like last December, one of our employees got COVID, we just had to shut the entire restaurant down because there's just nobody to take his spot at the moment. And healthcare is so expensive. I don't even have healthcare. So it's like, you know, I mean, people have to understand that restaurants are coming out of this, the other end of this devastating financial year, and a lot of us didn't get too much of the relief money. You know, at certain points, Mary and I were, my fiance who owns the restaurant with me, took our cars to one of those title loan places to take out 175% interest loan to pay payroll. So it's like, wow. You know, it's kind of a day-to-day thing that you're just hoping to make it through. So healthcare is not even an option at the moment. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. I'm going to have to cut you off. Our time is up today. It always goes too fast. Thanks to everyone who called in. And thanks so much to our guests, Ricky Cerna, Ali Arshad, Jacob Elliott, and Erica Gallegos. If you missed part of the show, we'll have audio up on our website soon, or you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you get podcasts. Our engineer this morning is Marino Spencer. Megan Kamrick handled the phones, and Ty Bannerman is our executive producer. I'm Kaveh Movahed. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.